Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading the Odessa American for Saturday, April 15, 2023. Landgraf sparks tout grid buildup, big West Texas project in the offing, by Bob Campbell. Austin State Representative Brooks Landgraf and Senator Kevin Sparks say beefing up the Texas power grid is a top priority of the 88th legislature, and they say a package of bills has been introduced to avoid a repetition of Winter Storm Uri, which cost $295 billion, left 4.5 million Texas homes and businesses without power, and killed 200 people in February 2021. While 2021 legislation addressed problems like winterizing power plants and other issues, Landgraf and Sparks say further action must be taken. I've proposed House Bill 4429 to address the main problem head-on, the need for dispatchable, reliable, natural gas-fueled electricity, said Landgraf, chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee. Upon passage, this bill would clear the way for a project in West Texas that would generate 1,350 megawatts of natural gas-fueled electricity, enough to power nearly 1.5 million Texas homes. The Odessa Republican said Corpus Christi Representative Todd Hunter's HB 4835 and House Joint Resolution 180 are also working through the legislative process this session with the aim of improving our grid. HB 4835 and HJR 180 will establish the Texas Energy Reliability Fund for new dispatchable generation construction, Landgraf said. By creating this fund, the legislature will balance the playing field for dispatchable generation development and send a clear message that the new generation is critical to provide the necessary megawatts for the security and reliability of the grid. Sparks said lawmakers are unfortunately trying to overcome decades of federal subsidies for intermittent or unreliable power, which has distorted the energy market for years and has created an imbalance between intermittent and readily dispatchable power. With this in mind, more work is needed on grid reliability in Texas, but Senate Bills 6 and 7 attempt to address the Electric Reliability Council of Texas's reoccurring reliability issues by incentivizing the dispatchable or on-demand power generation, said Sparks, a Midland Republican who is a member of the Senate Natural Resources and Economic Development Committee. This type of immediate dispatchable power is essential to stabilizing the grid. Doing nothing is not an option. SB 6 and SB 7 move us in the right direction. Those bills were filed by Republican Senators Charles Swertner of Georgetown and Phil King of Weatherford. 15th Annual Hops and Props to take place this weekend. Midland, this weekend, the High Sky Wing will present the 15th Annual Hops and Props Beer Tasting Fundraiser. The event will take place from 7 to 10:30 p.m. tonight at the hangar at the commemorative Air Force High Sky Wing located at 9600 Wright Drive in Midland. Patrons will get to sample more than 50 different beers in the company of vintage Warbirds and enjoy live music by Texas Rain, a silent auction, 50-50 raffle, and bottle cap pull will also be a part of the evening's activities. All proceeds will benefit the CAF High Sky Wing and the Midland Army Airfield Museum. No one under the age of 21 is allowed, and IDs are required at the entrance. General admission tickets are $45 per person in advance or $55 at the door and include unlimited beer tastings, appetizers from local restaurants, and a commemorative glass. A non-alcohol drinking ticket is offered for $25. VIP tables are available for $550, which includes 8 tickets. For more information, go to tinyurl.com/BDZN94J8. Noel Students Learn About Chicks by Ruth Campbell. Students in Sheila Wilson's third grade class at Noel Elementary School had some feathery company for the last 3 weeks or so, chicks. Wilson was one of the 10 teachers in Ector County ISD who took up the offer to bring chicks into her class. Extension agent Steve Paz donated the eggs and incubators to the classrooms. On Friday, the chicks were due to be picked up by the science department to be given back to the local farmers who donated the eggs. The chicks will stay together. Before they left, though, students got another chance to watch them in small groups. They also told Wilson all the things they had learned about the chicks through a bubble map. With these bubble maps, the word chicks were in the center with a circle around it, and other bubbles were like satellites outside so they could write in their facts. They also offered opinions. Students said the chicks made them nervous, and several had never seen the chicken life cycle. It was cool, said 8-year-old Ethan Ha. He said, this is because it takes 3 months for a chick to become an adult. Skylar Renner, 9, said she had watched videos with chicks before but hadn't seen them in real life. Hayden Del Bosque said it was cool to see how the chicks grew. Things they learned included hens lay 300 eggs each year. Chickens live for 10 to 15 years. Chicks become adults at 3 months. They take 21 days to hatch. They pip first break in the eggshell with an egg tooth. Once they pip, they take 7 to 24 hours to hatch. When the chickens are in the egg, they get all their food from inside the egg. Their color is determined by the color of their parent. The eggs weren't all the same color. The temperature in the incubator was 99.5 and 3 days before they hatched. It was turned up to 101. The incubator does what the mother hen does and spins the eggs. Odessa Night at the Rockhounds game. Odessa Night at the Rockhounds is set for April 26th at 6:30 p.m. The Rockhounds will be taking on the Corpus Christi Hooks. Odessa Chamber Board Chair Grayson Hankins will be throwing out the first pitch, and Odessan Allison Gray will perform the national anthem during the pregame ceremonies, which will begin about 6 p.m. A voucher coupon for the game can be found on the Odessa Chamber of Commerce website at bit.ly/30CCFOW. The voucher coupon is good for one $2 reserve seat ticket or one $4 box seat ticket and must be presented to the Rockhounds box office for exchange of a ticket. Odessans are encouraged to attend Odessa Night at the Rockhounds for a fun night of baseball for all ages. TB Still Out There by Ruth Campbell. Less prevalent than in poorer countries, tuberculosis is still around in the U.S. and Permian Basin. TB is a bacterial infection that is an airborne particle. Anyone can get it, but it tends to affect people that may have other health conditions or their immune system is compromised. It tends to be more common in third world countries because they don't have as many treatment options. Midland College Respiratory Care Clinical Director Holly Baker said, people get sick with it and it gets spread because the people that get sick with it don't have the availability to get treatment, so it is fairly widespread. We still have quite a few cases here in the U.S. every year, but there are treatments. It's 6 or 9 month treatment regimens, certain medications they have to take, and so you can't get rid of it, Baker said. When people were wearing masks, there was a downturn in flu and other viruses, and when mask wearing stopped, there was a small uptick, she said. Masks did prevent people from getting the flu during COVID, but to prevent TB, you'd have to wear a fitted N95 mask. Even then, health providers say you can still get it because it lingers in the air. Baker said there is more interest in respiratory therapy now because it became better known. Beforehand, not everybody knew about us or knew what we did, so there's been a lot more interest, she added. Odessa College is starting its respiratory therapy program again, but Baker said they never stopped at Midland College. The two-year program has about 24 students between the first and second years. It lasts all year, and it's all in person. Respiratory therapists are now in demand. When I graduated, it was hard to find a job. I went to Fort Worth. I grew up in Fort Worth, so I went to school there, and I couldn't find a job just because the hospitals had plenty of staff. The area was saturated, so that's why I ended up moving out here, Baker said. But now, when these kids graduate, they're going to be able to go wherever they want to go because the hospitals are all hurting, she added. COVID kind of changed the face of healthcare. So many people left and got out, and so hospitals are still really hurting. In general, respiratory therapists do a wide variety of things, but Baker said it varies a little bit from hospital to hospital. We're used in the ER. We're used on the floors. We're used in critical care. General care. We'll give breathing treatments to COVID patients, asthmatics. We'll do things called chest physiotherapy, where we help to move the secretions up and out for those patients that have really thick sputum, Baker said. ER, ICU, will either put the artificial airway down for the patient to breathe, or will assist the physician in that, and then we run the machine that keeps them breathing. That's just kind of a flyover overview. We're at every code, so our job is to manage the airway, Baker added. They are also brought in for consults so doctors can figure out what therapies or protocols need to be ordered. Respiratory therapists also work with cystic fibrosis patients. The Midland College Respiratory Therapy faculty has 2 full-time, 2 part-time, and a couple of PRNs or as-needed staff. Baker said the program has grown staff and student-wise since she arrived. The classes the past couple of years have had 4 or 7 students. The group that just started in the fall has 15, and there are more than 30 applicants for the fall. Clinical sites are in Odessa, Midland, Monahans, and UMC, and Covenant in Lubbock. Kisha Rasband, an instructor in Odessa College's vocational nursing program in Monahans, is an associate degree registered nurse. She earned her nursing degree from Odessa College in 2010. Tuberculosis is kind of a weird disease because it can be dormant for so long. You can have a latent case of tuberculosis that you got from a time when you were a young adult, and it did not present as an active disease process until you're an older adult, Rasband said. Active TB is what most people associate with tuberculosis because that's when you're seeing coughing, fatigue, low iron, and anemia, for example. But if you look at our statistics, the CDC actually says there's 13 million people in the U.S. that have latent tuberculosis that don't know about it. There are times that we'll actually see more active cases through this area, especially because we are close to the border. We do see cases pick up occasionally. Our health department tracks those, so we do not see more cases than our inlander friends. But it's nor a disease that we typically think of in the U.S. and as being a huge plague because we almost eradicated tuberculosis in our country, Rasband said. Some employers still want you to take a TB test in the healthcare industry, especially because tuberculosis is thought of as a silent killer that's just waiting. Healthcare professionals are constantly being tested for TB. Rasband said the first time there was an increase in the TB disease process was 2019 when COVID occurred. Prevention is quarantine of people with active TB, the systematic type. But the thing that stands up in other developed countries apart is the active treatment of TB. We treat it before it's symptomatic. The other thing is that happens is that we're able to because we have standardized medicine. We actively go to the doctor when we have health concerns. So all those comorbidities that cause TB to be so concerning, we're getting treatment for. Because we have a better healthcare system, we have less risk of that high incidence of TB. Our bodies are more effectively able to fight against it, Rasband said. Prevention is difficult because vaccines are only 20% effective, which is one of the reasons they aren't used here. Dr. George Flesher said the disease is more common in people that come from Mexico, Central America, or the former Soviet Union. They never had control, so it's endemic there, so the prevalence of people in those countries that have been exposed to TB is more than 50%. Having uncontrolled diabetes, having malnourishment, having disease processes that you're not taking care of decreases your immunity. And so you're not able to fight against that disease process. Really, living a healthy lifestyle is the only combat we can have against tuberculosis, Rasban said. TB also mimics other diseases. Some people will go without treatment for a long time because they think it's a cold. Unless they start seeing blood in their coughs, they won't get treatment. It's a really interesting disease. It has killed over 1 billion people over the last 200 years, which is more than any other disease process. It's been around forever, Rasban said. In 2008, some skeletons that were 9,000 years old had tuberculosis in the bones. Whenever it talks about consumption in our old textbooks, it's talking about tuberculosis. This disease has been around for a long time and we're all still fighting it. Not so much in our developed countries, but in our poverty countries, our areas where things like malaria and HIV are prevalent. You're seeing TB as well, where malnutrition is prevalent, Rasban said. You're starting to see eradication in developed countries, but not in underdeveloped countries. Flesher, who is affiliated with Stewart Hospitals, said if someone has latent TB, they have about a 10% chance of getting active TB in their lifetime. 50% of them get TB in the first 2 years. Then as time goes by, the risk of getting active TB is lower. Medications that we used to treat many illnesses also bring down the immune system in a way that increase risk of TB, Flesher said. I'm not seeing a lot of cases of latent TB, and those patients should be treated to prevent them from flaring in the future. But now we're a mix of problems because we have a lot of people who decided not to get treated in the past. We could not force everyone to get treated. Now, with these new medications and people living longer, we're seeing an increase in active TB, he added. TB is diagnosed through a blood test. Once it is activated, it lasts for many weeks. People present with fever, chronic cough. Some patients start to cough up specks of blood. They have night sweats and fever, usually at night. They start losing weight. The main problem is when people cough now, they think of COVID rather than TB. The disease is treated with antibiotics, but is very resistant to antibiotics. People are treated anywhere from 6 to 8 months, depending when they clear the infection. The Constitution, Vouchers and Empowering Parents by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. As your state representative, I take seriously my oath to preserve, protect, and defend the constitutions of Texas and the nation. It is my sworn duty to defend your constitutional rights to free speech and to bear arms. The Texas Constitution guarantees those rights, as well as others, such as the right of Texans to hunt, fish, and harvest wildlife. Our state constitution forbids a state income tax and requires the legislature to pass a balanced budget every 2 years. It also requires the legislature to establish, support, and maintain a system of free public schools. Last week, the state budget for 2024 and 2025 was debated on the House floor. Our state's budget comes in the form of a piece of legislation, House Bill 1, that is debated and amended by members in full public view. Prior to last week's floor debate, HB 1 was passed out of the House Appropriations Committee. It must now pass out of the Senate Finance Committee before receiving consideration by the full Senate. After all of that, HB 1 will head to a conference committee of the House and Senate where the changes made by each chamber are combined into one piece of legislation, and that eventually goes to Governor Abbott's desk to be signed into law. Over 400 amendments were filed to HB 1. Many, if not most, of the amendments were filed simply to make a point, to have a conversation about an issue in full public view. Very few of these amendments make it on to the bill, and of those that do, almost none stay on the bill all the way through the process. One particular budget amendment has garnered a great deal of attention. This amendment has been hyped up by both sides to be something more than it is. The amendment sought to prohibit the use of appropriated funds for school voucher programs. The amendment passed with 86 votes in support, and I was one of them. I voted for this same amendment in each of the last several sessions, and the language has never made it into the final budget. I don't expect to survive this time either. As I've said, I'm serious about my job to defend the Constitution. That is why I have and I will continue to steadfastly uphold my constitutional oath to support Texas public school students and teachers and why I voted for this amendment. However, I also believe in parental empowerment and my symbolic vote supporting public schools does not preclude me from seeking every available avenue to improve our system of education and protect parental rights. School choice legislation is still being considered in the House. I will carefully consider each proposal as they come up for a vote. However, most of the school districts I represent send millions of dollars back to the state each year in form of recapture payments. Anything that could further reduce the funding pool for these schools and others like them is simply a non-starter for me. Access to private education is not equitable across the state, and I will not stand for a system that would result in even more locally generated tax revenue, leaving the energy sector to benefit big cities in their suburbs. While any school choice proposal will have to go under the microscope, that is not the case for a bill seeking to protect or expand parental rights. I'm not only actively supporting every bill pertaining to this issue, I'm personally working on several bills myself. As a co-author of HB 900, I'm working to keep bad books out of our public school libraries. HB 900 creates high standards that must be followed for new books to be added to a library and prohibits the purchase of sexually explicit materials. I've also worked hard on HB 1155 and HB 1541 bills that prohibit public school instruction regarding sexual orientation or gender identity and expand parental rights pertaining to their public school children. Additionally, I'm working on legislation that establishes a grievance procedure for school districts to follow regarding complaints concerning parental rights and require schools to provide information about parental rights on their websites. Two other bills I'm fighting for, HB 1686 and HB 1938, prohibit gender reassignment surgeries for children and protect students from sexually grooming. While I am deeply troubled and saddened that any of this legislation is needed, I am and forever will be honored to fight for the rights of parents and for the protection of children. I am a state representative, but I am a husband and father first. The rights of parents, like the rights protected in our state and national constitutions, are sacred. Nothing is more important to me than protecting Texas families. That means empowering parents and severely punishing those who take advantage of our youth. Multiple times this session, I've been reminded of this passage from Matthew 18. If anyone causes one of these little ones to stumble, Jesus said, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Those are strong words from our Lord and Savior. Strong and true. I've got my marching orders. I'll keep up the good fight for Texas little ones and their parents until Jesus calls me home. Until then, my eyes are open and my ears are listening to any good idea that will make Texas families stronger.
God bless Texas.
Dairy farm explosion injures one person, kills 1,800 cattle, the Associated Press. Dimmitt. An explosion at a dairy farm in the Texas Panhandle that critically injured one person and killed an estimated 18,000 head of cattle is the deadliest barn fire recorded since the Animal Welfare Institute began tracking the fires. Castro County Sheriff Salvador Rivera, he has said Monday's fire and explosion at South Fork Dairy Farm near Dimmitt was likely caused by overheated equipment that would be investigated by the state fire marshal. This would be the most deadly fire involving cattle in the past decade since we started tracking that in 2013, Institute spokesman Marjorie Fishman said Thursday. The Institute also tracks barn fires and kills other livestock, including poultry, pigs, goats, and sheep. Find Refuge in Loss with God by Gian Carlos Villarontaro, Founding Pastor, Victory Church, Odessa. All of us go through different experiences in life that reminds us of the movie Castaway and the character Wilson. Somehow, we all have our Wilson. Sometimes that makes us feel like we are not alone. But eventually, like it happens in the movie, Wilson leaves us. Then what? It's absolutely devastating to let things go. To let someone go, even to let life go, and say, it's okay with my soul. Perhaps you hate the idea, After all, who likes that? I don't. I don't like the idea of losing someone that I love. That's probably the hardest part of life. It's hard to let things go, but to let someone go, that's probably one of the hardest things in life. Does the Lord know how much we suffer when that happens? Is He aware of our feelings when we say goodbye to the person we love so much? Is it possible that people in general don't know what it is to let someone go that you love so much? While you go through all those thoughts, you become really sad and maybe lost. It's precisely in those moments when you are so close to finding our Lord God, the refuge that you need the most, the place of peace and comfort, the embrace, the love, the words, even the touch of the most loving person in the world, the universe, the creator of heaven and earth, the Alpha, the Omega, our Lord God Almighty, the one who loves you the most, more than you will be able to comprehend on this side of eternity. Wilson needs to go so you can force you to make the next move. Yes, you might be lost in the ocean of many difficulties, but with our Lord, you will never be alone. He's your protector, your guide, your sustainer, your deliverer, your provider, your friend, your heavenly Father, your past, your present, your future. The Lord will lead you to find the destiny where you were made to be in order to do something amazing for Him, your Lord, for many others that will be inspired by your own survival story. Goodbye, Wilson, and thank you for what you did for me. High Court temporarily blocks restrictions on abortion pills. The Associated Press, Washington. The Supreme Court said Friday it was temporarily keeping in place federal rules for use of an abortion drug, while it takes time to more fully consider the issues raised at a court challenge. In an order signed by Justice Samuel Alito, the court put a 5-day pause on the fast-growing case so the justice could decide whether lower court rulings restricting the Food and Drug Administration approval of the drug Misoprostol should be allowed to take effect in the short term. The justices are being asked at this point only to determine that part of the April 7th ruling by U.S. District Judge Matthew Casamark in Texas, as modified by an appeal ruling Wednesday, can be enforced while the case continues. An order expires late Wednesday, suggesting the court will decide that issue by then. The court finds itself immersed in a new fight involving abortion less than a year after conservative justice reversed Roe v. Wade and allowed more than a dozen states to effectively ban abortion outright. President Joe Biden's administration, the New York-based Danco Laboratories, the maker of the pill, asked the justices to intervene. Poll. Among U.S. Latinos, Catholicism is still the largest faith. The Associated Press. New York. Catholics remain the largest religious group among Latinos in the United States, but the number of Latinos who identify as religiously unaffiliated continues to grow. Those are among the key findings in a comprehensive report released Thursday by the Pew Research Center that surveyed 7,647 U.S. adults in August 1st through 14th of last year. The report, which uses the term Latino and Hispanic interchangeably, found that Catholicism remains the largest faith among Latinos in the U.S., even as the number of Latino adults who identify as Catholics steadily declined over the past decade. The number went from 67% in 2010 to 43% last year. Still, the survey said Latinos remain about twice as likely as U.S. adults overall to identify as Catholic and less likely to be Protestants. Latinos, especially here in the U.S., are still very faith-centered, said the Reverend Carlos Velasquez, pastor of St. Brigid, a majority Latino Catholic church in the area straddling Brooklyn and Queens in New York City. Faith is a big part of all the people's lives in Latin America, and when they come here, faith is what grounds them, he said. The church helps with the difficult transition of immigration, which may are starting from scratch, he added. Latinos are religiously unaffiliated, describing themselves as atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular, are now about 30% of the overall Latino population. That's up from 18% a decade ago and 10% in 2010. The number of Latinos who are religiously unaffiliated is in a line with the U.S. adults overall, the report said. The religious unaffiliated, commonly known as nuns, are the fastest growing group in the survey, asking Americans about their religious identity. Even though Latino Americans may be, like all other Americans, increasingly unaffiliated, that certainly doesn't mean that they're non-religious, said Elizabeth Drescher, an adjunct professor at St. Clair University who wrote a book about the spiritual lives of the nuns. They may not be engaged in the institutional religion for a variety of reasons, but they may still be kind of the classic of religion measures of religiosity, like belief in God or the higher power, she said. The poll says the demographic faces shaping the nation's Latino population also have impacted religious affiliation trends. Among U.S. Latino ages 18 to 29, 79% were born in the U.S., nearly half, 49%, in this age group now identify as religiously unaffiliated. But only about 1 in 5 Latinos, 50 and older, are unaffiliated. Most of these older Latinos, 56%, were born outside the U.S., Overall, 52% of Latino immigrants identify as Catholic, and 21% are unaffiliated. U.S.-born Latinos are less likely to be Catholics. 36% are more likely to be unaffiliated. 39%, according to a 2022 Pew survey of Latino adults. Hispanic Americans are also strikingly underrepresented in Catholic schools and in the priesthood. Nearly a quarter of all U.S. Hispanics are former Catholics, while about two-thirds of Hispanic adults, 65%, say they were raised Catholic. 43% say they are currently Catholic, according to the survey. What's happening to Catholic Latinos in the U.S., and what's happening to the Catholics across the world, said the Reverend Felix Sanchez, pastor of St. Pius V, a majority Latino parish in New York City's Jamaican Queens. People are attending church less, he said. Young people are participating less in their parishes. He cautioned against presenting Latinos as a monolithic group, though. It's not the same to talk about the Argentinians and the Ecuadorians or a Mexican. It's not the same as first generation versus a third generation, Sanchez said. They all have different histories, tradition. What unites us is that we understand each other because we share the same language, but each one has its own cultural richness, and we have to respect that. Protestants. Protestants are the second largest faith group after Catholics, the report says. They account for 21% of Hispanic adults, a number that has remained relatively stable since 2010, with 15% of Latinos identifying as evangelical Protestants. Latino evangelicals have received national attention recently due to the political activism of some evangelical churches, the survey says. The interest in Latino evangelical comes as a white evangelicals have become a bulk word of support for Republican candidates in U.S. presidential elections, and after elections in which a rising share of Latino votes have supported Republican candidates. Republican candidates across the U.S. are seeking to expand recent gains the party has made with Hispanic voters from Florida to California. That seems to be driving them as bread and butter issues, including crime, struggling schools, as well as food and gas prices creeping beyond their paychecks. The report says 28% of Hispanic Republicans identify as evangelical Protestants, compared to 10% who identify as Democrats. Latino immigrants are slightly more than U.S.-born Latinos to be evangelical, 19% versus 12%. Evangelism is especially prevalent among Latinos with Central American origins, mirroring a pattern seen in those countries. Roughly 3 in 10 Central Americans, 31%, say they're evangelical Protestants, the report says. Among evangelical Protestants are Latinos, half identified with the Republican Party, are independents who lean towards the GOP, and 44% are Democratic or Democratic-leaning independents. Among Latino Catholics, by contrast, 72% identify as Democrats. Religiously unaffiliated Latinos are also mostly Democrats, 66%. Most U.S. Latinos, 65%, also say they were raised Catholic. Far fewer say they were raised Protestant, 18% are religiously unaffiliated, 13%. Older Latinos and those born outside the U.S. are especially likely to say they were raised Catholic, the report says. Like all Americans, many Latinos switch away from their childhood religion. It says adding that one-third of Latino adults say their current religion is different from their childhood faith. The poll's margin of error for the full sample of respondents is plus or minus 1.7 percentage points. Tunson says Letters Tell Christians Not to Be Influenced by the World by Bob Campbell. One of the Bible's more beautifully written books in Ephesians was sent by the Apostle John to the church he had started in Euphrates, Greece. The Reverend Isaiah D. Tunson, Jr. did a treatise on Ephesians last year for Faith International Seminary in Tuscan, Washington, where he was working on a bachelor's degree in religion. It's a beautiful book, not very long, only 6 chapters, said the Reverend Tunson, pastor of the Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church. Paul lets us know that even though the church has many members, it's only one body. I preach a lot from Ephesians because it tells us to walk in love and light and not be discouraged because we can find ourselves drifting away from what we're called to do. It gives us a lot of spiritual gifts. Tunson said Paul wrote the book while he was imprisoned in Rome awaiting execution, but he was not at all downcast. Before the apostle met Jesus Christ on the way to Damascus, Syria, to prosecute Christians, the pastor said he was a full-fledged rabbi who would have probably been the high priest of Jerusalem. Ephesus was a city in ancient Greece on the coast of Ionia. It runs 2 miles southwest of Slukuk in the Zemir province of Turkey. Paul had more degrees than a thermostat, but instead of looking after his own self, he put that along aside because he had love and concern for the church. Tunson said he was worried about its salvation. Like Paul, we are in the world, but we are not of the world because we are set apart as Christians believe by the blood of Christ. Paul is like a bodybuilder building up the body of Christ. For the believer, life is lived on both the heavenly plane and the earthly plane, where we are now, and we must walk in a manner worthy of the calling we have received. Citing 2 Corinthians 5:17, Tunson said, "Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new." We have been chosen, so we should act like Christ's children, he said. That would need to know who we are. We don't have to put on 3-piece suits, walk around with the Bible to let folks know we're Christians. They'll know from the way we present ourselves. Tunson said Paul wanted to ensure that the Ephesians did not become like the Israelites, who made a golden calf and began worshiping it like Moses was on the Mount Sinai to receive the 10 Commandments. He wanted to make sure that they stayed close to God and did not allow anything that was not in God to come into the church, he said. He warned them not to be conformed to this world, which is what we preach and the deacons must instill in our members. We are living in tough times, but we are like football players who stay with the team all the way through the season. We have to stay with God all the way to glory.
Nimitz Student to Represent ECISD in National B by Ruth Campbell, Nimitz Middle School 7th grader Ajay Hungalpally will be heading to the Scripps National Spelling Bee May 30th through June 1st in National Harbor, Maryland. Gundlapalli said he has tried to get in the bee before. His sister, Anika Gundlapalli, has also represented Nimitz in the National Bee several times. My sister did it, and of course my parents encouraged me a lot, and I also wanted to see if I can do it just like my sister, especially since I'd already tried, Gundlapalli said. Most likely he will keep competing in the National B. He noted that the regional B was pretty tough and had some formidable spellers. He added that he feels he's better at studying than spelling. He feels very excited to make the national event and has been studying an hour a day and longer on weekends. Odessa's Shajay Sivakumar, a regional spelling bee winner who got 9th place in the National Bee, is also helping Gundlapalli. His family and his sister help him drill the words. Learning the roots helps him in school, especially reading books and star passages. I'm practicing the study list they gave me, which has some of the regional words in it. I'm also studying roots, so that way I can find out how to solve a word piece by piece, 13-year-old Gundlapalli said. At the National Bee, Gundla Polly said he's looking forward to meeting the other spellers. He added that it's very exciting because it will be the first time he'll be on TV. Anika has offered valuable advice. She tells you to stay calm and think about your word before you spell it. Ask for all of the information, Gundla Polly said. Ajay's parents are Dr. Saul Gundla Polly and Dr. Magana Gilala. We're excited. He worked really hard to get there. It was hours and hours of working during the snow day that we got, so we did put a lot of work, and I'm happy for him that he made it, Galala said. There's got to be something you can do in middle school, and really there aren't many things that you can keep yourself busy to progress academically in middle school, and that's one of the important ones, so we do encourage them, Galala said. She has learned with Ajay as he's studying, doing the words with him and checking the words. I've learned lots of pronunciations of words I've never heard of before, Galala said. She added that she's very confident that Ajay will do well. He's putting in the work every day. Whenever he works hard, there's always a good result. So as long as he's putting in the hours and putting in the work, I know he'll succeed, Galala said. Judge says Alec Baldwin settlement sealed by Morgan Lee. Santa Fe, New Mexico, a judge has agreed to seal from public view the terms of a proposed settlement agreement that benefits the son of slain cinematographer Helena Hutchins in a wrongful death lawsuit against actor Alec Baldwin and an array of producers and crew involved linked to Hutchins' death in a fatal film set shooting. The New Mexico judge cited privacy concerns about Helena's 10-year-old son, Andros Hutchins. Baldwin, an actor film co-producer, was pointing a pistol at cinematographer Helena Hutchins when the gun went off, killing her and wounding the director, Joel Souza, on the set of the Western movie Rust during a movie rehearsal on the outskirts of Santa Fe in 2021. Widower Matthew Hutchins filed the wrongful death suit last year against Rust producers, including Baldwin, as well as members of the film crew with safety responsibilities and an ammunition supplier. Son Andros Hutchins, who was 9 at the time of the shooting, is also named as a plaintiff. Attorneys for the boy said Monday that secrecy provisions are paramount to protect the boy's privacy and finalize a settlement with Rust producers. At least 5 other civil lawsuits related to Helena Hutchins' death are pending in courts. Plaintiffs in those cases asked for the hearings to remain open. They worried about the unforeseen consequences if the agreement were to collapse and implications for insurance payments in other lawsuits. But the judge agreed that the privacy rights of the boy outweighed court obligations for public disclosure and ordered that the settlement documents and approval hearings be sealed. What is driving my decision is really the interest of the minor child, and that is one of the very most powerful reasons to seal a matter, said District Court Judge Brian Bidshed in a video conference hearing of the Santa Fe-based court. The civil lawsuit argues that Baldwin and other film crew members ignored industry gun safety rules on the set of Rust. Baldwin and other defendants have disputed those accusations. Knowledge of the settlement terms also will be off limits to people beyond Rust producers who were named as defendants in the lawsuit, including weapons supervisor Hannah Gutierrez Reed. Several of those defendants objected to being left in the dark on details of the settlement through approval of the agreement should end their involvement in the wrongful death suit. Explainer: What to Know About First Test Flight of SpaceX's Starship by Marcia Dunn. Elon Musk's SpaceX is about to take its most daring leap yet with a round-the-world test flight of its mammoth Starship. It's the biggest and mightiest rocket ever built at 400 feet, with the lofty goals of ferrying people to the moon and Mars. Monday's launch attempt was called off because of a stuck valve in the first stage booster, and there could be another try this week from South Texas. Musk's company got the okay from the Federal Aviation Administration on Friday. It will be the first launch with Starship's two sections together. No one will be on board. Early versions of the sci-fi looking upper stage rocketed several miles into the stratosphere a few years back, crashing four times before finally landing upright in 2021. The towering first stage rocket booster, dubbed Super Heavy, will soar for the first time. For this demo, SpaceX won't attempt any landings of the rocket or the spacecraft. Everything will fall into the sea. I am not saying it will get to orbit, but I am guaranteeing excitement. It won't be boring, Musk promised at a Morgan Stanley conference last month. I think it's got, I don't know, hopefully about a 50% chance of reaching orbit. Here's the rundown on Starship's debut supersized rocket. The stainless steel Starship has 33 main engines and 16.7 million pounds of thrust. All but two of the methane-fueled first stage engines ignited during a launch pad test in January, good enough to reach orbit, Musk noted. Given its muscle, Starship could lift as much as 250 tons and accommodate 100 people on a trip to Mars. The six-engine spacecraft accounts for 164 feet of its height. Musk anticipates using Starship to launch satellites into low Earth orbit, including his own Starlinks for internet service, before strapping anyone in. Starship easily eclipses NASA's moon rockets and Saturn V from the bygone Apollo era and the Space Launch System from the Artemis program that logged its first lunar trip late last year. Also outflanks the former Soviet Union's N1 moon rocket, which never made it past a minute into flight, exploding with no one aboard. Game plan. The test flight will last 1.5 hours and fall short of a full orbit of Earth. If Starship reaches the 3-minute mark after launch, the booster will be commanded to separate and fall into the Gulf of Mexico. The spacecraft would continue eastward, passing over the Atlantic, Indian, and Pacific Oceans before ditching near Hawaii. Starship is designed to be fully reusable, but nothing will be saved from the test flight. Harvard astrophysicist and spacecraft tracker Jonathan McDowell will be more excited whenever Starship actually lands and returns intact from orbit. It will be a profound development in spaceflight if and when Starship is debugged and operational, he said. Launch pad. Starship will take off from a remote site on the southernmost tip of Texas near Boca Chica Beach. It's just below South Padre Island and about 20 miles from Brownsville. Down the road from the launch pad is the complex where SpaceX has been developing and building Starship prototypes for the past several years. The complex, called Starbase, has more than 1,800 employees who live in Brownsville or elsewhere in the Rio Grande Valley. The Texas launch pad is equipped with giant robotic arms called chopsticks to eventually grab a returning booster as it lands. SpaceX is retooling one of its two Florida launch pads to accommodate Starships down the road. Florida is where SpaceX's Falcon rockets blast off with crew, space station cargo, and satellites for NASA and other customers. The odds, as usual, Musk is remarkably blunt about his chances, giving even odds at best that Starship will reach orbit on its first flight. But with a fleet of Starships under construction at Starbase, he estimates an 80% chance that one of them will attain orbit by year's end. He expects it will take a couple years to achieve full and rapid reusability. Customers with Starship, the California-based SpaceX, is focusing on the moon for now, with a $3 billion NASA contract to land astronauts on the lunar surface as early as 2025 using the upper stage spacecraft. It will be the first moon landing by astronauts in more than 50 years. The moonwalkers will leave Earth via NASA's Orion capsule and Space Launch System rocket, and then transfer to Starship in lunar orbit for the descent to the surface and then back to Orion. To reach the moon and beyond, Starship will first need to refuel in low Earth orbit. SpaceX envisions an orbiting depot with windowless Starships as tankers, but Starship isn't just for NASA. A private crew will be first to fly Starship orbiting Earth. Two private flights to the moon would follow. No landings, just fly-arounds. Other players. There are other new rockets on the horizon. Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin is readying the new Glenn rocket for its orbital debut from Cape Canaveral, Florida, in the next year or so. Named after the first American to orbit the world, John Glenn, the rocket towers over the company's current New Shepard rocket, named for Mercury astronaut Alan Shepard's 1961 suborbital hop. NASA will use New Glenn to send a pair of spacecraft to Mars in 2024. United Launch Alliance expects its new Vulcan rocket to make its inaugural launch later this year, hoisting a private lunar lander to the moon at NASA's behest. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. SBA announces 2023 Small Business Week Award winners by Odessa American. Lubbock, Calvin Davis, District Director of the U.S. Small Business Administration's West Texas District Office, announced the names of the 2023 Small Business Week Award winners from the 71 counties in the West Texas District. We are especially proud of these family-owned small businesses who represent the best of the best in West Texas. They stimulate their local, state, and national economies by providing jobs and invested capital for their community, said Davis. Maurice Tirano of The Human Being has won the 2023 Small Business Person of the Year for the Permian Basin area. Edward and Latoya Mayberry, owners of Toya's Precious Jewels, have won the 2023 Minority Small Business Champion for the Midland area. Events will be held throughout our district and our nation, recognizing outstanding small business owners for their achievements and contributions to our nation's economy. Ted James, Regional Administrator of SBA, stated, "I am delighted to celebrate the contributions of entrepreneurs across Region 6 during National Small Business Week. These winners represent the impact of small businesses across the nation who help fuel local economies through their innovation, resilience, and ingenuity." Tyler Patton, Director of America's SBDC at UTPB, said the winners exemplify the entrepreneurial spirit of West Texas and have proven their effectiveness in starting and growing their businesses. Moreover, the owners' resiliency has been critical to their success. The SBDC at UTPB is very proud of this achievement for both businesses. The U.S. Small Business Administration helps power the American dream of business ownership. As the only go-to resource and voice for small businesses backed by the strength of the federal government, the SBA empowers entrepreneurs and small business owners with the resources and support they need to start, grow, and expand their businesses or recover from declared disaster. It delivers services through an extensive network of SBA field offices and partnerships with public and private organizations. To learn more, visit www.sba.gov.
Dear Abby, overwhelmed young adult looking for a reset. Dear Abby, I'm 20 years old and dating a Marine. I work at a hospital and I also have a part-time job. I recently rented an apartment near where my boyfriend is staying, and I'm bursting my butt to be independent. My boyfriend struggles because he's got a lot going on as well and doesn't earn that much money. I'm the breadwinner right now, and honestly, I'm just tired. I work way too hard, and I'm really stressed. Life is hard, and I genuinely feel that I can't catch a break. Any advice? Overwhelmed in Virginia. Dear Overwhelm, this is the life you have chosen, and you are doing all you can. Carrying so much stress is bad for your emotional and physical health. Your boyfriend may not be making much money now, but he isn't broke. It may be time to step back and review your finances and his, and whether you should continue to be the breadwinner. Things may get easier as your boyfriend gains rank and more seniority in the military. Dear Abby, a couple moved next door several years ago. My wife and I were welcoming and did some socializing with them, dinners, festivals, parties. We soon realized that we have little in common with them. When we're together, the conversation is so difficult, it's exhausting. They're nice people, but we no longer enjoy doing things with them. The problem is, how do I make this clear to them? We have declined numerous invitations and offered to spend time together, but they are also persistent. They have many other friends and contacts, and loneliness isn't the issue. How can we get the message across without being rude? We're running out of excuses. Out of excuses in the South. Dear out of excuses, there is no polite way to tell people you don't enjoy being with them. However, folks today have compelling obligations, full schedules. They develop new interests and juggle busy social lives. This is a fact of life. Because these neighbors have many other friends and contacts, they will find a way to fill their time if you continue being busy. Dear Abby, whenever I see strangers, especially my age in their 30s, toss gun wrappers and food and beverage containers on the ground, I have conflicted feelings. I want to approach them and say something like, "Did you just throw that on the ground? Is that how you were raised or expect others to pick up your dirt?" Then I imagine the dirty looks I would get, or worse, the escalating into an argument. I care about the environment and the community I live in. It saddens me that people don't have similar respect or concern about the future and the environment. Do you have any ideas on how to succulently tell people to stop littering without it appearing that I'm telling them off? Caring citizen in New Jersey. Dear caring citizen, that some individuals have so little respect for the environment and for their neighbors is disappointing. If you carry out your fantasy, it will almost certainly spark an angry and defensive reaction. If you would give you some sense of satisfaction, consider picking up the litter yourself. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Nubs that emerged inside mouth thought to be new teeth. Dear Dr. Roach, what causes the growth of new teeth at my current age? I'm a 74-year-old woman in good medical health except for the transient insomnia attack, TIA. Generally, I feel well and keep active. I noticed nubs behind my lower front teeth, two on each side, about 3 or 4 years ago. They were small, but seemed to have grown some since then. They don't cause me any problems yet, but I'm afraid that they might move my teeth forward. I have all my teeth except for my wisdom teeth. I've never had a toothache. Answer. A person is born with all the teeth they will ever get, but they are not normally erupted at birth. Normally, your deciduous, primary baby teeth begin to come in and erupt between 6 to 10 months and start to fall out at about age 6. Then your permanent teeth take their place. A few percent of people will have additional teeth called supernumerary teeth, which will occur in the place within months, but more commonly occur in maxilla, upper jaw, rather than the mandible, lower jaw. When these erupt, it's usually between age 7 and 10. The oldest person I could find in literature with eruption and supernumeracy teeth is age 70, although one of my dental colleagues told me he had a patient also in her mid-70s with this condition. They need to be extracted if they are impacting the existing teeth or causing other complications. I can't be sure at all about these nubs you're feeling are numeracy teeth that might be erupting. I certainly recommend a visit to the dentist as soon as possible to confirm this is unlikely diagnosis or to open up some other cause, such retained deciduous roots.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.